Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we start, I would love it if you could go join my community where we talk about podcasts, we talk about music. I release a lot of things on there way before anywhere else. Link is in the description. Go join that after you've listened to this podcast. Also, if you've got any questions that you want me to ask podcast guests, if you've got any, if you want any guests coming on, please let me know in the podcast section of that. It's a Discord, but if you sign up and then you'll get the link sent to you to the Discord. Be great to have you there. So I'll start rambling on. Podcast time. Noizu doesn't really need any introduction, as his career is doing special things right now. He had a huge record called Summer 91 over the last couple years, and it's just been blowing up everywhere. He is an extremely solid producer. I remember meeting him when he started the Noizu project, and just to see how he's grown from then until now is absolutely amazing, and I'm super happy for him, especially for a fellow Brit. Without further ado, Noizu. Mr. Noizu, what's cooking, man?
Hello.
Getting your cup of tea in?
Yep.
Good man.
I've already had three this morning.
So British.
I'm living up to the stereotype.
I wish I liked tea, man. Like,
you don't like it?
No, I like boba tea because it's just pretty much sugar in a drink.
Right.
But I've never drank tea or coffee.
Really? No coffee?
I cannot stand coffee.
Really?
Like,
oh man, what about when you're on tour? Like in the morning,
just water.
No. Yeah,
you know,
oh, man, I can't get up without like a double espresso.
Really?
Yeah,
dude, you need to look at that.
I know. It's bad, isn't it?
I wish I liked coffee. I love the concept of having like a really nice coffee machine.
Yeah,
and like making coffee in the morning. I think I just need to get a girlfriend that likes coffee. And then I just, like, I love coffee machines. They look fucking great. They're like a cool.
They look cool.
Yeah, they're like a cool piece of furniture. Yeah. Like, I love them, but it's just.
I was trying to get one. I was trying to get one in our bedroom, and my wife was like, "You can't. You don't live in a hotel."
That's addiction to another level.
Yeah,
that's like an alcoholic putting a beer fridge in his bedroom.
Yeah, it really is.
I respect it.
I've got a wine fridge in the studio, but I never open it.
Yeah, I like the whole fridge in the studio.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's like a nice...
It's kind of handy.
Yeah, it's like a nice, like, you don't have to move too far to get a drink.
No.
Do you?
Where's your studio? Is this your studio here?
This is my studio in Detroit, yeah.
In Detroit. Oh, nice.
Yeah, my.
Is that where you live, or?
So I live in Detroit when I'm in the States, and then I also live in Somerset in the UK.
Nice.
So.
Nice.
Yeah, this one's a pretty dark studio. There's like no sunlight at all. I blocked all the windows up for like sound.
Yeah.
And massively regretted it. Like, it was great when I first got it, but now I'm just like, I just want to look into my garden and
see. I have a whole, you can't see it really, but I have a whole like wall that's a window that looks out into the garden. Mm. And I put shutters on it thinking, oh yeah, it'll be fine. And then like every time I go too loud, all you can hear is...
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, for God's sake.
You can swear, it's fine.
Okay, go on.
Yeah, the whole studio thing. I don't know what... When you first started writing, were you like... Were you into the whole like dark studio vibe?
No, I've never... I don't know. I've never really been like a studio person.
Okay.
So like before I did Noizu... I used to do a lot of like sessions and work for film and all this stuff. And like they used to put us in like Westlake in LA.
Yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't get anything. I never get anything good done in those rooms because I feel intimidated. Yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah, yeah.
I just like being in a room like that you just feel comfortable in, you know. I couldn't care if it was like, you know, an amazing studio.
Yeah.
Doesn't really. When I bought this house, the studio was one of the last rooms I did.
Really?
And I haven't even finished it. Yeah.
I like that though, because I think like it's nice to be, it's so important environment. And I was thinking, I was doing some like interview.
Yeah.
I did some like interview today, like some like writing interview. And it was like a 5 studio tips or something like that. And like I wrote down like environment, because I think it's so easy to like get caught up in the like the rat race of what everyone else does is like make your studio look like a studio and have it like sounding great and all of that good stuff. But it's still got to feel right.
Yeah. To be honest, like when I first did music, it was at my parents' house. And it was in this like tiny, tiny, tiny room. With like just a desk, a keyboard, and a screen, and that was back in like, I didn't even know when that was, like 2009.
Yeah.
So I've always just been used to that. So I'm not one of those people that can just like write and finish a whole thing on a laptop and headphones. Mm. So I need my speakers.
Yeah.
But I don't need like a mad soundproof room to master.
Yeah.
Just because that's what you're used to. I think it's just whatever you're used to.
Oh, 100%. You can make,
you know,
you can make, well, there's the like famous stories of like what Fred again does, right? And just, she just does it in cafes, which, it's pretty fucking mental.
See,
I can do that.
I could do that technically. Like, I'm capable of doing it, but it's just, I don't have, if I'm sitting in a cafe or if I'm out and about, I want to experience the world around me, not look at the fucking laptop. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Because I think it's I think it's also that whole like I like to listen to it loud.
Yeah.
And I really dislike having loud headphones in. It like is not comfortable. So like having speakers is key for me.
100%. Yeah.
Do you get neighbor issues in LA, or are you in like a full on house?
No, like I used to. So before we moved here, I was renting in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But like 3 other people were producers there as well. So
were you in a DJ building?
Pretty much. Yeah. I was like opposite Dombrowski.
Yeah.
For like years. And then I moved out to Woodland Hills, which is like more in the sticks. So we got like space, so we don't have anyone attached to us.
Yeah.
Which is so now you can like crank it and it's fine.
Yeah, that's way nicer. Apartment living and writing music is never fun at all.
No, we always used to get the police used to come round and be like, oh, turn down the music, you know, noise complaints.
Really?
Yeah, for the first like few years it was like that. And then I think they got so, and then Hollywood just, especially since the pandemic, it got so like wild there that I don't think they have time to kind of go around for noise complaints anymore.
Yeah, they got bigger things to worry about there.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah.
Do you like living in LA?
Yeah, I like it. I prefer it now I'm in the Valley.
Yeah.
I was getting to a point in Hollywood where I wasn't loving it anymore.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things. I think moving here benefited my career.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know if I'm at that point now where I could probably, I think I could be anywhere now and it wouldn't matter as long as I'm near an airport.
Yeah.
But like, it still does feel like there's a lot of music based things here. Mm. But I think if you took that away from LA, I'd probably move somewhere else.
How did you find it benefited your career?
Well, I was in London before, and like my career was just dry, and I had a career before, and I was just like going absolutely nowhere.
What was the career and before?
I did like an EDM project.
Okay.
When like EDM Big Room was like popping.
Yeah.
And then did that for a bit, and then did film stuff, and I was just doing like random. I was doing music and making a living from music, but it was very like on and off.
Yeah, no consistency.
So I was like, fuck. Yeah, no consistency. And then Chris Lake had moved to LA, and my manager moved, I think, around the same time as him.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, just come and try it out. You know, at the time, like that tech house sound was really building there. Mm. I was like, I reckon I could do a bit of that. So I was like, I'm going to go for a year and see how it goes.
Did the wife come with you then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was 6 years ago. Still here. So
still living the dream in LA. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think being in LA though, and like kind of being around the like Chris and the crew and all and the I Eat a Lot, do you think that really benefited in comparison to if you weren't in LA?
I think at the beginning, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think now,
yeah,
really, because everyone's just doing their own thing and
totally,
like everyone's just doing shows and
yeah,
just busy, so no one's ever here. That's the other thing. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Everyone that you know that's doing well now is on the road or just busy doing whatever they're doing. Yeah. So I think you could be anywhere. But I think at that time when I started, it was good because I could just show up to shows at like just like all the random shows they had at the time, and yeah.
Kind yeah, of space, being it, space, space yacht. That was it, isn't it?
Space yacht. That's what I meant. Yeah, yeah.
Space yacht. Yeah, I think realistically in America, LA, especially at that time when you moved, was the only real place that there was kind of a community around the tech, the tech house bubble. Because in New York, it was like always like uber cool kids, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think it still is.
Yeah.
New York. I was just in New York. Like, I feel like New York has always had a strong EDM scene, like when EDM was big. Mm-hmm. And those kind of EDM DJs like still do well in New York. In Manhattan.
Yeah.
But then you also have the flip side of New York where it's like super underground.
Yeah.
A bit more like chin stroking.
Yeah.
You know, whereas LA is a bit more like, I don't know. They're kind of open to a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, I think LA for me is just slightly more American to New York. I feel like New York's a little bit more European in the sense of like
100%.
A little bit more like people from different parts of the world.
It feels like you're in Europe when you're in New York. Yeah.
And you have a lot of like the fashion industry as well, which kind of brings a bit of like bouginess to it. Whereas LA's a lot more like party vibes. It's like, it's on the coast, isn't it? It's like people just want
it. It's hot.
Yeah. It's different vibes. Yeah. Different vibes. Where would you go if you didn't?
I honestly love New York.
Yeah.
I love New York because it's closer to England.
Yeah.
And I like the feeling of it. Miami's cool. I like Miami, but I don't know. I don't know if I could live there.
I could not live in Miami.
No. I think it's really fun, but it's like, I wonder if it would be too fun, or I don't know. I think New York's more me.
I feel like nobody works like in London. Miami. It's a bit like LA, Miami.
Very much so.
Where nobody works. But can you speak Spanish?
No.
Yeah, I feel like in Miami you have to speak Spanish.
Yeah, I think in LA you should probably...
True.
Like, to a degree. I mean, we grew up in England. They don't really teach Spanish at school. We learned French.
What's Spanish?
And German. Yeah.
What's another language? We don't need to learn that. Yeah.
And also at school, when they said Spanish, I used to think of like old, like Latin.
Yeah.
Kind of ancient Latin.
Oh, it's so funny looking back, because we must have gone to school around the same time. But looking back at what they taught us compared to like now, you're just like, I wish I listened in school and learned another language.
I mean, I think about that a lot. Like, because I don't know about you, but when you tour, like when you're in the plane and when you're just walking around airports and stuff, what do you listen to? Do you listen to music or
podcasts.
Talking? Yeah, same. Yeah. But I've been trying to like learn things that I'm interested in on the road instead of just sitting there, I don't know, wasting my time.
Yeah.
And I'm like finding things I'm interested in that I learned at school, but I didn't give a shit about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, I wish I just paid attention.
What have you learned recently?
I've been learning about the Roman Empire.
Oh, really?
It's really nerdy. Yeah. It's taken me 7 months. I was listening to this podcast. And it's like the history of Rome. And it's like, there's just so much. It's taken me 7 months to get through.
Wow.
But I kind of like, I think because it's so far removed from now. And when you're like listening to it and just walking around, it just kind of takes you out of, I like zone out at airports. Yeah. I hate airports so much. So anything that kind of takes you away from that.
Yeah. It's nice. I think I don't know about you, but for me, it's like also when I'm listening to podcasts or like listening to something, it kind of, it cuts everybody out, but it also kind of gives, I don't know about you, but it gives me a little bit of company.
Massively. I think that's why you like listening to talking.
Yeah.
I listen to your podcast in the road.
Oh, thanks, mate. Give you a shout out next time. Like here's noisy. I think it's just really nice, and I love podcasts for that, because it wasn't really a thing like for a long time. Like
no.
And touring, like traveling without podcasts, to be fair, anything without podcasts, because like I guess it might be different for you because you're married, but we do a lot of things by ourselves generally when we're touring.
Yeah.
And I think it's just nice to have like this constant conversation going on, or you're listening to a conversation that you're interested in.
Honestly, I don't really have a tour manager. I mean, I do sometimes, and I probably should, but I travel alone a lot or with my management. But you spend it, like you say, you spend a lot of time on your own. And when people ask about, when they ask you like, oh, what advice would you give to DJs or producers?
Yeah.
I actually think that's more important to like tackle than all the other shit. Because it's like, once you can conquer being on your own, or like at least dealing with the loneliness of touring, then you're kind of winning.
Yeah, I agree. And also the whole like learn to enjoy travel.
Yeah, you do have to change your... You have to turn it so it's not a burden.
Yeah.
You have to kind of look forward to it, which is hard.
It's weird because, like, I'm sure you know, like, but I know so many friends that just hate traveling. And I'm just like, I totally get it. I totally get it, because it can be draining as fuck. And, like, sometimes you're like, oh, my God, I do not want to get on a plane today. But, like, it's the job part of the job, and you have to enjoy it.
Yeah. I think it's also like depends on how long you've been doing it. I mean, when I first started touring, I would just drink every night. and just, you know, I was younger, so I could get on planes and be hungover and
be fine.
I'd be fine.
Yeah.
Whereas now I found myself like, I really have to pick and choose when, if I'm going to drink or how much I'm going to drink and how long I'm going to stay out for.
Yeah.
Because it like affects you for the rest of the week.
Oh, 100%. And then it doesn't just affect like your touring, but it affects writing music, it affects business, it affects family, it gets everything.
Yeah.
Like it's really interesting how the industry is changing over like the last 10 years, because 10 years ago it was just like get fucked up and just like party as much as possible. I know with John being back, he's all about getting fucked up and partying.
Well, but I think there's like this weird division now. It's not a division in terms of like how people look at each other, but it's a division in their attitude. It's like you either have like the Fisher and the John type, where like, and I think it's just down to whether you can hack it or not.
Of course,
And some people party so hard. And then the other thing I've been seeing is like, it's either that or people just completely sober.
Yeah. You know what the thing I like?
Not really a middle ground.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, the one thing I like about John and Fish though, like although they party hard and like whatever you want to do, I respect.
They work very hard though.
They work hard.
That's the thing.
And also they're like fit and healthy. Like John's in good shape and Fish is in fucking good shape. Like
So we were talking about this morning. My wife was like, how does Fisher stay so slim on the road? He's on the road more than anyone I know, and it's like eating on the road is just so hard.
Yeah,
but I think he probably, I'm sure he gets sorted out well.
Yeah, but how do you deal with it?
I've tried because I put on quite a lot of weight, and then I've been trying to lose it. So I tried fasting, so I kind of skip breakfast.
Yeah.
But I don't eat until like midday. And then I kind of stick to like a loose paleo diet.
Okay.
So it's like I try and avoid junk food. Don't eat sugar. I just eat meat and vegetables.
Nice.
How's that going? I don't really eat many carbs.
How's that going?
That's about it. Yeah, I like it. That's the only diet I've tried, loads of diets, and that's the only one I can stick to and like makes you feel good.
Is it sustainable?
What to do every day?
Yeah, to like just
I find it's easier actually at home.
Mm.
You just go to the supermarket and you just buy fish, meat, vegetable, salad. I mean, you just eat a lot of meat and salad and vegetables.
I love that you called it a supermarket and you like brought it back to England.
It's because I'm talking to you.
Yeah. Everyone else would be like, what's a supermarket?
Have you, when you moved to America, did you like, were there words that you like picked up on and then you said it back in England and everyone's like going nuts?
No.
I say trash now.
Oh my God.
Takes a piss out. They're like, what the hell's trash?
My family, like I go back sometimes and they're like, you've got like an American twang. And like that gets bullied out of me literally within about an hour. And you just can't do it. my nephew, he's like 5 and they watch so much YouTube, and a lot of it's American YouTube. And he said, he was like, can you put this in the trash to me the other day? And I was like,
that's wild. And he lives in England.
He lives in England. Sure. I was like, you never say that ever again, boy.
No.
It's the bin.
I know. But please don't.
Oh, it's mad. It's mad, but the whole it's weird living in America and being English. How do you find it?
I love living here. Like I don't think I would move back.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I've really embraced. Do you know what? I quite like being foreign. But I quite like being in a place where it's not, I don't feel attached to it. Because in England, like, I love England and I'm proud to be English and stuff. But like, I get so bogged down in like politics and like everything that's going on when I'm there.
Yeah.
Whereas when I'm here, I don't have any control. Like, I can't vote, I can't do anything. So it's like, you know, things annoy me, but I don't know. I feel free. I don't know why.
I get that. I totally get that. I don't disagree with you at all. To be fair, when I'm back in the UK, I don't pay attention to anything like news wise purposely.
No.
I think during COVID or at the beginning of COVID, I just stopped everything. I was like, okay, I don't need to listen to any of this. But I think it's, I do like that foreign feeling. It's like, it sounds a bit egotistical, but like 90% of the time you go somewhere, you're a bit different to everybody else because you're not from
here. Yeah. Honestly, if you went to, like, if you were American and you went to where I used to live, I would just be one of a million other lads that look the same, dress the same, talk the same, act the same. Like, when you're in a city like LA, which there's just so many people from everywhere, I don't know, it's just interesting and feels a bit more free and it's different, isn't it, I suppose. It's like, the grass is always greener. It's like, I know so many people here that want to live in England and I'm like, why?
Yeah.
But then it's because they're from here.
Yeah.
So they're used to it.
Yeah, I think it's just, we all like changes, right? And I think you can get caught up. I think there's that kind of tall poppy syndrome in the UK a little bit as well, where a lot of people don't necessarily like you to be as successful, whereas in America it's like if you're successful they fucking love you, and it's like
this is why I left England, because it's like when I was working in a supermarket in a grocery store and then I did music and I did well when I was like 24. I was doing well, and then it kind of dried out. And like in England, everyone was like, oh, well, at least you kind of did your music. Like, you should probably think about getting a normal job.
Yeah.
And I fucking hate that attitude so much, because it's like, why? Like, A, I don't even know what a normal job is, because everyone has different jobs.
Yeah.
And B, it's just that attitude of like, you tried, you failed, like stand back in line.
Yeah.
Whereas in America, it's like you can try, get big, you can then fail, and then you can do it over and over again.
Mm.
And it's pretty much one of the only places on earth that you can do that, I think.
Well, Chris is a classic example for that.
Yeah, like, exactly.
He had his hits, that Changes record. It was huge in the UK. And then he did his EDM thing. And all of them popped off. All of them were huge. And
every time he gets involved in something, he always does well.
Yeah,
like because he had that song with Steve Aoki.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that did when that sound was huge and that was massive. And then he completely rebranded, tried again.
Took a few years.
Did the same.
Took a few years and then got massive again.
But do you think he could have done that in England though?
I just don't think the market's there for him there.
No.
If that makes sense. I don't think...
Yeah.
I don't... The England music scene is so strange. And...
Yeah.
It's like... You have to be extremely, like, in a, like, very small clique in the UK to, like...
You have to be part of the scene.
Yeah. To have any... And I don't feel like, and I think this is why all of us English lot that come to America do well in America, is because we're not really part of a scene, or we're trying to create our own thing. And I think Chris was never part of a scene. You were never really part of a scene. I was never part of a scene. Like, Chris Lorenzo, he was kind of part of a scene, but he was probably the most. But he also had huge success in England, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Yeah. But he was one of those rare few that had that success in England and then came over here and had even more success.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes things come over and it's too English.
Yeah.
Like, there's certain sounds that you hear on the radio, or like even now there's stuff popping off in the UK, but it's so British.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It's like... When it goes abroad, apart from Europe, I don't think it works.
No, I totally agree. Like, well, look at what Patrick's doing with Trick. Like, I really respect it and I want it to do as well as possible, but that sound is so 90s England, and I just don't, I don't see your, I don't want to offend anyone, but I'm just talking how I feel. I don't see, and I want them to prove me wrong, but I don't see the very gimmicky side of that sound that's come, that's massive in the UK. I don't see that translating anywhere else in the world. Maybe Australia. Maybe Australia.
Yeah, I think Australia. Yeah, it's interesting, actually, yeah. I mean, he's an example, but, like, he's, like, a very... As a DJ himself, he's very worldwide, I'd say.
Oh,
that sound is very... That's what I mean about the UK sound. Yeah. It's like you could have stuff like that that is maybe a little gimmicky or whatever, and that will chart in the UK.
100%, yeah.
Then, like, you never hear it in America.
No, never. And that's... I really respect what Patrick's done. Obviously, I'm part of the label. Like, I've signed a couple of records. And, like, my biggest record is On Trick. But, like, yeah, like...
That's it.
It's such a... Like, I can't even, like, when I play a Trick party, I'm, like, worlds apart from everybody on there, because what they're playing, I'm just, like,
You don't even know what it is.
I don't even know what it is.
Oh. Yeah. That's what I found interesting, like, because I tour super heavy in the US, like Canada and this side of the world.
Yeah.
And then I'll go to, I just did Australia, which was sick, but, like, I'll go to Europe and it's really hit and miss.
Yeah.
You know, it's like some places, like the Netherlands, it goes off. Other places, though, it's like, there's just, because they have their own scenes and what's going on there is so different to here. It's like, it throws you off.
Australia's hit and miss for me. Like,
yeah, Australia is hit and miss in general.
But it's so random as well. Because, like, 1 year, like, for me, like, you'll play, like, one city 1 year and it will be absolutely awful. And then you'll go back to the same city the next year. The scenes evolve and it's the best show of the tour. Like,
that literally happened to me 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
The exact same thing. Yeah.
It's so weird. Like, Perth used to be awful. I literally remember playing on a table in this shitty club, like, pre-COVID in Perth. And it was, like, so awful. It was next to a fish and chip shop. I was walking back from the promoter, and this, like, Hell's Angels guy that was, like, ran all the venues, like, knew the promoter and was like, I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, get me out of here. And then literally, last year I played Perth and it was the best show on the tour. And it was just like 500 kids raving.
That's sick.
And you're just like,
it's so weird how that happens.
I think
that's one place that has that most extreme change than anywhere else. Like, the US is pretty consistent. The UK is pretty consistent. Like, you know where you want to play and where you don't want to play.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
I did Cairns.
In France?
I don't know how you say it. In Australia.
Oh, okay. Oh, Cairns.
And, like, Cairns. And so the first time I played there, it was, like, on a Monday night. There was about three people there. And about two or three songs in, there was no one apart from the bar staff. And I actually just unplugged and left. I was like, fuck this.
Yeah.
Like, this is just degrading. And then I did the club next door to it 2 weeks ago on a Monday night, and I was dreading it. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be the worst.
Yeah.
And it was like the best show I did in Australia.
Really?
It was so weird.
And Cairns is the bumfuck middle of nowhere of Australia.
Nowhere, yeah.
It's like way up north. Yeah. Fuck. It's so strange out there. Do you like touring there?
Do I like touring there?
Yeah.
When the offer comes in, I can never be asked, because I'm like, it's so far away. I'm going to be away from home for like 2 weeks, which is kind of normal anyway now, but... I can never be asked, even though, but I love it as a place.
Really?
And then when I get there, I have such a good time.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I'm always like, oh yeah, I'll do it again. And then I know now I'll wait another year and they'll be like, do you want to go back? And I'll be like, nah. And then I'll go do it and it'll be amazing.
I think that's the thing that I find with it is the consistency. Is like, because we can't consistently tour there, it's like really hard to build a profile. And
well, it just feels like every time you're going there, you're starting again.
Exactly. And it's like new kids that are coming to your shows. It's like, you were like here, and even in the UK and even in Europe, like you can play clubs multiple times a year. Like, let's say max like three times a year. And like, or cities three times a year. And you see people come back and you see like familiar faces, and you can kind of build a relationship up with them. You can build a relationship up with promoters and do all of that. But I find in places like that where you're just touring because you're an international DJ and you kind of have to take yourself out of a market, it kind of can get to the point where you're like, you're starting from scratch every time you go there. But again, like, there's certain artists like Patrick. Patrick tours Australia and sells mental tickets there.
Really?
Mental tickets.
I think the sound in Australia is definitely more linked to the UK.
Yeah.
Than it is to the US.
Drum and bass is huge there.
Drum and bass is massive. I've never heard so much. I was like, what the fuck? Last time I heard that much, it was when I was like 16 and in the UK.
Yeah, it's mad. We don't even listen to that much in the UK. But it's huge.
No. Because everyone's always like, oh, drum and bass is huge in the UK. But when you kind of look at it, it is big. But it's like, it has its moments. It goes like that. Yeah. But I wouldn't say it's having a mad moment right now.
House is way bigger.
Yeah.
House and or trance or whatever it is at this moment in time.
Yeah. There's a whole, there's a load of new sounds coming out now that are like, it's really interesting to see the shift, but everything's getting faster.
Yeah. What's your take
on
it?
That's for sure. On where everything's going.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been doing it for so long that when sounds shift, it doesn't really surprise me because it always does. Like, it's just natural.
Yeah.
I think we're in that weird transition phase where you don't really know, like, what it is, what's going to be like the new tech house of the US, you know? Like, the melodic techno stuff seems like maybe that could be it, but you can just see that going super EDM already quite quick.
Yeah.
It sounds it. Some it of is. It literally sounds like EDM tunes. Yeah. I don't really know. I don't know. It's always hard as an artist when there's like a shift and you either have to keep up, adapt, or stick to your guns, and you got to make that decision and you got to hope that you make the right one. Basically,
what's your decision on that?
I've just been like, I've got a few records lined up, and the next one I've got coming, I've had like really, it's one of those records that I'm getting a lot of reaction to over other records.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know, I'm just kind of sticking to what I do and what I like making, and maybe that changes, maybe it doesn't. I don't really know.
I think it's really
important. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it, for me, it's like, I don't know. It's weird because the whole concept of doing what we do is because we do, because we love it, right? And it's like, the only reason why we want to be DJs is to make good music. But then, then capitalism gets involved, and then you have to pay your mortgage, and then you have to pay your rent or whatever, and you become accustomed to a lifestyle of what you have to keep paying. And then I think that's when it can easily be like your artistry can easily get taken over by what the industry is telling you they want. And what you want to do in your artistic life. And I also think the way people consume music now is so different to how it was even when we started, let alone 20 years ago when people were listening completely different. So previously There's always been sounds. It's just like fashion. It's like it goes in and out. Yeah, fashion. Yeah. Like Dirty Bird. I remember when Dirty Bird was the hottest thing on the press in 2008. Mm. Like in Europe, they were everywhere. And then they weren't. And then they were the biggest thing here, and then they weren't. Same with Drum Code. Drum Code was the biggest thing ever. They, don't get me wrong, they're still huge. All of these brands are still huge. But you go in and out, and they go in and out of fashion, just like music. But I think the whole where we're at in our career, I think there's something there's something really special about double downing and just like doing what we love. Like we're very fortunate that we have a career in this. There's a lot of artists that I'm sure you see that seem to just like jump on every bandwagon.
Well, I think that's what makes people full. Yeah. It's like, if you just jump on every single bandwagon, I mean, unless you're already in a position where you're like Martin Garrix and you're so big, you just got to keep that like machine rolling, you know?
Yeah.
And there's no like, at that point, it is just solid business, you know? But like, I get people will send me songs that they make, and one minute they're sending me like a tech house record or a bass house record or a techno record. And like, every time they send a song, it's a different fucking genre.
Yeah,
and I'm like, how are you ever going to get big if you're just like chasing tail and really inconsistent?
Yeah.
You know, like it's, at the end of the day, music is no different to like fashion or any consumer thing where it's like, it's just branding.
Yeah.
It's like, if you want a burger and you want it quick, you go to McDonald's.
Yeah.
If you want like chicken in the UK and you want it spicy or whatever, you can go to Nando's.
Yeah.
And you know that when you go there, that's what you're going to get. Not saying that like musicians have to like be like that, but
there's a level.
You have to have some understanding of what that artist is to then be able to enjoy that artist and go see them.
If you went to a Rolling, if you went to a Rolling Stones concert and all they played was Bob Marley, you'd be like, "What the actual fuck?" It would, to be fair, I'd probably quite
pissed.
Like it.
It'd be sick.
It'd be sick, but yeah, you'd be pissed. And it's just like you—if somebody came to a Noisy show and all you played was drum and bass, or all you played was like 150 BPM techno, you're gonna lose half the crowd. And I think that there is a level, but also I guess like coming from a new producer point of view or a new DJ point of view, I honestly think it's like, although it's very easy to make music nowadays, it's easier than it ever was. Like with all of your splice packs that you make, like, but like it's
fucked up with that.
But it's very easy to make music. But the thing that I find with it, and I'd like your take on it, is the way we consume it, which I was kind of getting to earlier, is with Spotify and Apple Music and like these playlist curations of like, you have to sound like these playlists to get any success in streaming.
Yeah.
I feel like that kind of just halts all creativity, which then makes it super hard for like people to grow and artistry create. I think it is way easier to have like a viral moment than what it used to, but like a viral moment,
but those moments come down quicker than they just as quick as they, I mean, you see it all the time
now.
You see it all the time, and you know, like major labels and stuff will be like, oh, TikTok this, TikTok that, we want to have a viral hit. But it's like there's no consistency for the artist. It's purely McDonald's music.
Yeah, literally.
You know,
and like there's a new viral record every week now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the idea of a viral record isn't even that exciting.
No.
Well,
especially like I think it's different because if like you or I had like a viral record, we have like a foundation of fans, once you have a foundation of fans, you can then grow on that, if you know what I mean. Mm. And having a viral moment will kind of benefit that because it will bring people in, and there's a huge catalog for people to go, oh shit, This is Noisy's new record that's blowing up. But also, he's got like 20 other records that I absolutely love. I'm going to follow this guy and I'm going to be
in. You
can
go back. Yeah.
Whereas I think what's happening now, you have like artists that have a big record within DJs or a big viral moment on TikTok or whatever, and they don't have anything to back it up and there's no foundation. So like these labels are signing the records and then just spitting the guys out afterwards because they don't have a follow-up or they're not making the same record. There's plenty of people out there and it's sad, really.
The thing as well with the industry, it's like there's so many levels to it. You know, it's like, what's your streaming numbers? What's your social media numbers? Like, how good is your music? Did it do well on Beatport? Like, there's so many different things and not everyone has all of it. It's pretty much impossible to have it all.
Who does?
Probably a few.
Like, but
I don't know
the few.
I don't know.
Sorry, I'm going to sneeze.
Well, you know the few because that's why you know them.
It's Chris, Fish, John, Dom.
Yeah.
Like, Peggy.
Yeah.
Like, there's only, like, probably 10 in the whole of the industry that has all of it.
Yeah. But it's so, you know, like, you're never going to nail it all.
No.
I think having that expectation of, like, I want to have 1 million followers, I want to have, I don't know, 10 million monthly listeners, you know, it's just, you have to kind of just find what you're good at and where you're comfortable and just try and do that your best.
Yeah.
And then at least you're giving your best. I feel sorry for kids now. I speak to a lot of them. We sign a lot of like unknown people to my label. And it's really hard because it's like, they don't, like a lot of the companies don't care about them because they're so small.
Yeah.
It's not in their interest to push it.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know where you even begin like that. And the other thing is they're so consumed about trying to make a TikTok or a reel, they're not actually making music.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, are you an influencer or are you a musician? And some people are good at both, but I don't know how they do it.
Very, very few of them. And I think that's why I liked kind of when you came out with Noisy, that it wasn't really about you. It was kind of about... What was the kind of backstory behind that?
There was like a legal one where I was kind of stuck in a deal and I technically shouldn't have been doing other stuff.
Yeah.
But it was also just because before I had a project, the one thing I wasn't good at was social media.
Yeah.
So I was like, if we could do this kind of cartoon, the inspiration was like gorillas.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, I just wanted it to be like that, but I quickly realized I couldn't afford to basically do that because the gorillas spend so much money on that stuff.
And like one of the guys that is in the gorillas does all the art.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
And it was just quite unsustainable. Like, and also at that time as well, like the element of mystery was all right because like Mallow was popping and he was like wearing a balaclava and, you know, it was like, who is Mallow? Yeah. And it was that kind of thing where you didn't have to show, for some reason, there was just that one moment there where people didn't really care too much about like what you're having for breakfast.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas now it's so, you have to like put everything, your whole life on social media.
No one cares about
you don't
music.
Have to.
No one cares about the music.
No.
Everyone cares about who you are as a person.
Yeah. And that's changed so much. So I think if we stuck with that cartoon thing, we would have got left in the dust a little bit.
Mm.
Especially now. Because I would have had to make so much
animated
content for social media. It would have cost a fortune.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, you used to be able to post a couple times a week and just get on with it. And now it's like...
Yeah.
But again, I'm having this conversation with my team at the moment and also like other mates in the industry. And it's like...
Mm. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
We're in a lucky position where we have a following, right? And I guess I'm definitely coming from this concept with from where we're standing. But it's like,
yeah,
do we really have to post that often? Do we really have to like give our all to social media? Like, yes, but like, what are we trying to gain out of posting on social media?
I think from what my team say to me, it's just like, it's just about growing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately now, like, a metric of growth is social media. Which is mad, because, like, you know, you can grow social media accounts through like trending reels and
yep.
like, it's so irrelevant to what the essentially the core yeah. product is. But at the same time, I suppose more followers, more exposure, more people you can reach.
I don't know, this is the thing, you post shit
and it doesn't even reach your fucking audience.
Exactly. And this is the thing that I'm like questioning, is like, okay, like, yes, you need social media, unless you're Aphex Twin or something like that. Like, you need social media.
Or Burial.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, there's so many artists that have way more followers than you and I put together.
Yeah.
Yet still don't sell as many tickets as you and I put together.
Or stream very well.
Or do any of that. But they have a massive social media. But, like, does that mean they're more successful than us? No, it doesn't.
No, but this is why I think there's the balance, because and I think it still does come down to your music, because it's like, you know, you can have 10 million monthly listeners,
yeah,
and you could sell no tickets.
Yeah,
like, there's so many artists like that, that have like mad streams, but like, you'd never see them do a show, you never see them on lineups, like. Yeah. I think like what we do is similar to like what a punk rock band does.
Yeah.
It's like, you kind of make music for that room and you build your career by going to all of those rooms and playing that music in those rooms.
Yeah.
And you just build up a following like that. I still think that's the best way.
Organic. It feels way more organic.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you just got to basically graft.
Yeah,
and do the touring and play those shit rims, and just smash it when you're beginning, and that's all you can do.
Yeah,
really.
Yes, yeah, it's strange, because there's so many ways in this industry to like be successful, because you can be extremely successful on social media and earn way more money than all of us put together on social media. And still have a DJ career, right?
But
there's also those artists, like you said, that have huge amount of monthly listeners, don't have a single follower on Spotify in the grand scheme of what they're streaming, but they're earning reasonably good cash because of their streams, and they can get high remix fees because of their streams and all of that.
Yeah,
and then there's us, where we're touring around, where your streams are really fucking strong, but like, where our streams aren't as high as the higher streamers, our followers aren't as high as the influencers, but we can sell 1,000 tickets in certain markets or 2,000 tickets in certain markets. It's just pick your battle, isn't it? I guess
it is. And it's also like, what do you measure success, like, how do you measure success to yourself? Because I mean, like, if I could show everything that I've done now to the, when I started Noisy, I would have been like, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, like, never, you know, I was just happy, like, playing in America, getting a few shows. Whereas now it's a whole thing, but now I'm here and it's like, there's so much work to do to get to where you want to be. You never really feel like you're doing well.
Does that ever stop?
You never know when you do it. Well, no, I don't think it does. Because I, when you speak to people like Chris or, I mean, they know they've done well and they're doing well, but there's always like, they're still having meetings with their managers talking about how to improve, how to get bigger. So it's, I suppose you've got to kind of stop for a second sometimes and like look back and go, you did that. That's pretty sick.
Do you, do that? Do you do that?
I do. I have done. Not enough. No, but like I have little things. Like when we, Summer 91 went platinum in like three countries.
Wow.
And I was like, that's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Like I never thought I'd ever have a, you know, a plaque or a thing or, you know, and you're like, you know, and that song's kind of had done its thing now. It's been a while, but yeah, and you just look back and you go, shit, that's pretty cool actually.
Yeah.
Like, or you maybe you sell out a venue that's big and you've always wanted to sell out and you do, and then you're like, shit, that's pretty cool as well.
But, is that pretty cool thing for like 10 minutes though?
Well, that's the thing. this is what's, this is the conundrum of success. It's like success is like a material thing, right? So it's like you people love buying material things. It's like, oh, I want to get a Rolex, I want to get this, I want to get that. You fucking buy one and it sucks.
Yeah.
Because 2 minutes later, I think half the excitement was wanting something rather than having it.
100%.
So, yeah. I think at the end of the day, you just got to be, you do just, it sounds really like hippie, but you do just have to find happiness in your life outside of your work.
I think it's really, I've actually never heard of that analogy of success is like materialism. And I fucking love that concept because you're so right.
Never brings you that joy that you want.
No.
Because I'm like my dad. My dad is a very like driven, hardworking like person and always strives for more. And he's one of those people that will never retire.
Yeah.
You know, he'll just keep going. And I inherited that from him. And but like every time you hit a milestone, it's like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Now what? Now what? What are you going to do now? I've got like, I'm only 32. I've got like another X amount of years left on earth. What am I going to do now?
No, you're right. You're 100% right. But how do you become happy in your personal life, in your life outside music, when your life is music?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. That's the hardest bit. Because I think the danger for a lot of super successful people is that at the end of the day, it's all going to come to an end, right? Doesn't matter who you are. At some point, you're going to stop doing what you're doing. And then you've got the rest of your life to live out. And you can do something completely different. Like Calvin, you know, like he's found this newfound love for farming. You know, like he's completely switched up. I mean, he still does his stuff, but I don't know. But it's like, you got to find things outside of this, I think, to keep you sane.
What's your things outside of this?
Cooking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like cooking. I'll just barbecue out there like every night that I'm not on tour and try and improve that. I don't know.
It's weird, isn't it? It's a deep conversation because it's, I think it's something that like hits everybody and we don't realize we're all going through it at the same time because I think to get to where we're at, you have to have put a certain amount of hours in and those a certain amount of hours literally turns into your whole life. And then you sit back and realize, like, oh shit, I've literally spent the last 15 years working to get to this, but in the meantime, like, I've not done anything else outside of this. So, like, to actually then go and find a hobby or a relationship or something that can, like, give you a life outside of your career is really fucking... I struggle with it all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
I don't think it's, like, an easy thing. One thing I do have is recently, because for the last like 3 years I've just toured solid, right? I don't take holidays really. I mean, I don't, apart from Christmas, and even then it's short. I never see friends and family, and that is the one thing that I always, like, if I'm like drunk on the road and I'm in a hotel and I'm brushing my teeth before bed or whatever, I, like, you know, when you kind of see yourself in the mirror,
yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, like, you've got to make sure that all those things that you've compromised is worth it for this.
100%.
You know, because I'm like, fuck, all my friends got, like, I've had kids and I've never even seen the kids. Yeah. Like, haven't been for a beer with my best mate in like a year. I don't see my sister. I don't see my mum and dad.
Yeah.
Like, family members are dying.
Yeah.
And like, I haven't seen them.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's kind of like you have to, sometimes it's that thing of like, I hope what I'm doing is worth it for that, for like missing out on all of that.
Yeah. And then it comes the deeper question of like, is it worth it?
I think it is. Otherwise you wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
Otherwise you wouldn't sacrifice those things to do it. I think, like, one thing I always say is, like, if you were to, like, look back on everything that you did because of music and all the places you've been to, all the people you met, all the things you've seen, like, not many people can say they did that in their life.
Not at all. Not at all.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I guess,
we're very fortunate. I guess the thing that I guess I'm kind of questioning it to a certain extent at this moment in time, but it's like, okay, you've got a weekend of shows, all right? And the weekend of shows, yeah, brings, let's just say it brings in 10 grand, okay? I'm just putting a number out there. Is that 10 grand, and the shows, you know they're just going to be like, you're just doing it to earn the cash, right?
Yeah.
If you didn't do those shows and you went home for 10 days and saw your family and friends,
yeah,
is that worth the 10 grand?
Well, that's what I'm going to do more next year. Yeah. Is like make more time to go see people and not chase money.
Yeah.
And always chase money. Because I think, like, how much money do people need as well? I mean,
totally.
I know after a certain amount that I've earned, I can live very comfortably, and then I keep going, and then there's like more money, and then it's like, okay, this is just, that's excess money, which is cool.
Yeah.
But it's like, do I really need more? I don't know. Yeah. It's, yeah, I've done a lot of those kind of weekends where it's like, I mean, even when my family are here, they'll come to LA for like 2 weeks or a week,
and you'll still go to
and I've still done shows like every weekend. Like we were in Palm Springs, and we were there for a week, and for 3 days I wasn't there because I was just went off and did shows in fucking Detroit. It was like Detroit, Chicago, and then somewhere else, and then back down to Palm Springs for the holiday.
Yeah, which realistically you could have probably just done the Chicago show and left.
Yeah, but then I'm like, and then you get back and they're like, oh yeah, we've had such a nice time. Yeah. And I'm like, why did I do that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know.
I think it's also having a team around you that understand what you want to get out of the career. Because I think it's very easy to have that, like, okay, we need to make money. So the team are just going to be like money mode, which I respect. Like, we've all been there, right? And we have to be there. We have to get there to get to a certain point in our career, not just financially, but like, to grow, you have to put the hustle in. You have to fucking work, and you have to tour those shows.
Yeah, you do.
You really have to. There's nobody out, unless you have a hit record that's fucking, what is a hit record nowadays in the grand scheme of things? Like, there's so many ways. So, like, unless you have that luck that 99% of the people don't have in this industry, you have to put the work in. And I think you just get used to putting the work in and used to saying yes to every show, or like, you say no to all the shows and then they come back to you with more money, and then you say no again, they come back to you with more money. You're like, well, I can't really, started at $4,000 and now we're at $10,000. I can't really turn down that. So it's like,
no.
Okay. Yeah.
And also, like, I've been with my manager for like 11 years.
Wow.
And we, before we did this project, we had our ups and downs together, but we stuck it out.
Yeah.
And we've been lucky enough with this project where it's every year, like, this project never was like, it never blew up like that.
No.
But it's every year we've just like improved. And while all those offers and shows and stuff are coming in, we say yes to them because it's like, I think you know it doesn't last forever.
Yeah.
And we've been there before when there was nothing.
Yeah.
And while the phone's ringing, it's like, fuck it, let's just go. Let's just do it. Because it's like, isn't that why we're doing it? Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, but then I see people like Fish and John and the amount of shows they do, and I'm like, fuck, that's insane.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, but you do it as well.
It's because
you would do it as well.
I would 100% if I had all those offers.
Same.
Yeah.
If I was getting offers for 5 days a week, 7 days a week, I'd be touring 7 days a week. The differences between them and us is that because of the finances of what they're earning, they get to do it in a very different way to what we are doing it.
Yeah.
So like, you get to take people along with you all the time. You get, your family can tour with you, if you know what I mean, because you don't have to, they don't have to work, if you know what I mean.
There's
comforts that come with that, but yes, they're working their fucking ass off.
The comforts of constantly touring are actually weirdly better because you're like always on the road.
Yeah.
So then, and if you're on that level, you're always going to be in a nice hotel.
Yeah.
You probably fly a lot of private jets.
Yeah.
Or if not first class all the time.
Every time, yeah.
It's just a more luxurious way of traveling.
Yeah, like, totally.
Every day. Yeah.
But you have to. It's like
I'm friends
with Christiana, who manages Black Coffee. And there was a point in his career where he was like, I'm only flying private. Like, no matter what flight we're going, it's private. And like,
really, wow.
That's a huge expense to take, right? As an artist, like, we know how much that costs, right?
I mean, that's the thing. That's a personal expense that you choose to pay, you know?
Yeah. But if that makes your life more comfortable, it's worth every penny, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think that is also the thing, is like making sure that whilst we're giving up, and I know it's like some people listen and be like, guys, you've got the best job in the world. We do have the best job in the world. But like,
I'm not saying we're not.
No, but like, if you can afford to make your touring slightly more comfortable, and it means that you don't regret missing out on those family things, and it makes it easier to miss out on those things that everyone else in normal life is kind of getting on with, then fucking do it. Because like you said, you're not going to be doing this forever, and you might as well fucking enjoy it.
Yeah, I used to be like, when I first started touring, I used to see people flying like, you know, first, or like spending loads of money and all this shit. And I'd be like, you know, rich fuckers. Yeah. and then like the more you tour, and then obviously the more money you earn from touring, you're like, oh yeah, shit. No, you kind of do need that, because it's like,
yeah,
sometimes the flight is where you sleep.
Yeah.
So you want to have a thing that folds back and you can just relax on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I still never fly first.
No, me neither. I could never.
I can't bring myself
same,
to do it. I'm like,
same. I'll pay for an upgrade. Like the good thing with BA and AA, when you go to the airport, if you're flying international, you can pay for an upgrade and it's way cheaper. It's like, yeah, $500 to go business, yeah, yeah, which is like cheap.
That's good. Yeah.
But like when you go buy flights and it's like $6,000 return for a flight, I'm like, fuck no.
It's insane. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fuck. That's how much it was. It was $8,000 for a business flight. It was $8,000 to upgrade to business for my flight back from Sydney.
Oh, were you on Qantas?
Yeah.
They don't do deals to upgrade.
Who the fuck is paying $8,000 to sit in business?
And then you see like four kids are there in yeah, business. Yeah, yeah. And you're like, these kids are just growing up on another level of wealth.
That's, you know Gordon Ramsay?
Yeah.
The chef. He makes his kids fly at the back of the plane every time they go back from England and the US.
Good.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty,
because
pretty amazing.
I imagine being brought up and around that much money. It just,
I don't know what it does to you, but
I can't imagine it's good.
No, me neither.
Like, for your any kind of like concept of anything.
Yeah, your first experience on a plane in first class. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about a couple of things. I want to talk about Summer 91, and how that changed your career, and if it did. Really?
Yeah, it did. It did. Yeah. It was good because it charted in loads of different countries in Europe, which was cool because we were very like American focused.
Yeah.
So it was quite nice to have some kind of like success outside of the US.
Yeah.
And it did really well in the UK, which is like the first thing I've ever done in my life that's done well in the UK. it did change everything, because like, I suppose I ended up touring more off the back of it.
Yeah.
And there's like a moment now that feels like everyone's waiting for in your set, which is a blessing and a curse.
Totally.
I don't know. Yeah, it really did help. Really did help. And I wrote it with my wife.
Oh, like, really?
She wrote the vocals and sang it. So it's kind of like,
that's
helped us both together, you know, which has been amazing.
Yeah, that's fucking cool. And was it on your own label?
It was, yeah. It was on Techni. And then it started to, I think Radio 1 in the UK, we're going to add it to, I don't know, like the C list or whatever it is on their rotation. And then RCA picked it up in the UK. So then they kind of took over and then
upstream. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it change your touring in the UK?
I got more offers in the UK and in Europe. Like I've been, ever since that summer, I've been going to the Netherlands more.
Yeah.
I think because it was in the pandemic, I think if I was in England,
of course it was. Yeah.
And like I was touring the UK when that was like popping in the UK.
Yeah.
I think I would have done a lot more, had a lot more from it in the UK, but I was here in the US. Yeah. So
no, that makes sense. Yeah. I forgot that it was in the pandemic.
It was kind of like coming out of the pandemic. So yeah.
Big record though, man. How is it? Because I've never had that much success on a record. And I always am interested in the feeling after it's been successful and you're like gearing up for your next few releases. Like, is there like a level of pressure that you struggle with, or is the pressure good, or is there no pressure at all? Like, what? Because I've
spoken to
people on here, and like, they've said that there's no pressure, but I don't believe them.
No, that's a lie. I honestly, I think that's lies.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't agree. Like, well, so A, we never intended it. We never wrote it to be what it, to be what it happened to it. So it was a fluke, whatever. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But like, we weren't also trying to chase, like, we weren't also trying to be like a radio artist person.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, the record labels all want another one. I didn't really, I wasn't that bothered about doing another one.
Yeah.
So there was like, it was kind of 50-50 where it's like, in the back of your head, you're like, oh, should I try and do more of this and give it to these big labels and try and do that? But then I knew deep down that it wasn't the right move. Mm. So at first it was tough because it's like, obviously everything you release afterwards is not going to be like, because we wanted to do more clubby records or just a bit more not so commercial.
Yeah.
So, like the first couple of releases were a little underwhelming. Because it was kind of back to where we were before.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, it's weird. It's you kind of have this massive high from it for like a while. And then you get used to it, going back to that whole thing of you just get used to stuff. And then you kind of like start releasing other music and you don't get the same feeling that you got from that record.
Yeah.
So yeah, I suppose it's like it's a blessing. It's mainly a blessing, but there's a few like little things, curses that come with it, you know.
No, I totally hear that. Has it changed your feelings on when you release a new record though?
Yeah, because it normally feels more underwhelming.
Yeah. Dude,
the thing with that though, right? The thing with that record was that we put it out on my label, and it did well on Beatport.
Yeah,
and it had a few. It did initially have some really early Radio 1 support, which I'd never get.
Yeah,
so I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. But from the day it came out to like the peak chart position that it got to, was over a year.
Wow.
So it was like really like
gradual. Yeah.
So it kind of felt like it was going on for ages, which is weird because, you know, if you release a club record, you put that shit out.
2 weeks.
And it feels like it's done in like 2 weeks. it is weird. It's a cool experience. It's a cool feeling, but I think... Yeah, it's more. I think just going back to the club, more clubby records was where I sit better.
I think it goes back to what your brand is, right? And it's like,
yeah,
it's kind of amazing that you wrote a record that somebody liked and it kind of turned into a different thing, right? And that's not me diminishing the power of that record because great records always shine through at the end of the day. They always do.
Yeah.
But like also the fact that you went into the studio and you didn't try and write a record that did that, and you just were doing a record that was you, if you know what I mean. And if you take out the success of it, it's still a great club record for a Noizu set, and it still makes sense in that. So I think like that's the thing, is as long as you're being yourself and you can, the thing that I struggle with is that success of a record on a streaming number is like, if my records don't hit a certain number, like I'm like, they're absolute failure. Even if they're like the most requested record in my DMs, or they're the biggest records in the show, if that streaming number isn't as high as I have in my head, failure.
You're like, it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh mate, I get that all the time. Like we did a song and it was like, every time I do a show, people hold it up on phone saying, play this record.
Yeah.
But like, it didn't do what we thought it was going to do at all. And it's like, to me, I almost like don't want to play it in my sets because I feel like that record failed. But it didn't.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it did, but it didn't. It's so weird.
Well, it did on a streaming level in your head.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
But it didn't for what your brand is, and that's a club DJ.
Yeah. Yeah, and it all goes back to that. I mean, so we said to RCA, like, because they wanted more, like, extensions of blah, blah, blah. So that we're giving them, my next release is with them. But, like, there's a massive gap between every record I've ever given them, because it's like, we're like, those records that might be more of that, they're not going to come around all the time, you know, like, we're not going to sit here and just try and write that music all of a sudden. We're just going to keep doing our thing, and then when we're ready, when there's one that feels right, we'll give it to you. And they've been really cool about that.
That's cool, because it's lucky. It's really cool that, because realistically, it's also like, in the grand scheme, unless we're like Calvin Harris or someone on that on that level, like, we don't know if a record's going to do well or not. Like, we really don't. And sometimes it actually has to come from the underground. It has to come organically through the ways of what we are so used to releasing music. And then eventually, if it picks up, it picks up. And then everyone can kind of put the money in and go. Which is why you're hearing so many people get upstreams now, and like these crazy deals that are happening of like records popping off and then the majors getting involved and trying to make it a hit. But like 90% of the time when the majors get involved, they don't it doesn't do it.
No. I think, because I also think like what a major thinks, or what a lot of people think is going to be a hit, is normally just pretty fucking generic.
Yeah.
And boring. Like, I know, like Summer 91, it is a commercial sounding record, but like when it started, it was an instrumental that did well. That then we added a vocal into it. Then we added another vocal into it.
Yeah.
Like, to get it to where it got, but it didn't start like that.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's what helped it. Like, I think if we just bust that final version straight out, it probably would have done well, but maybe not as well, because it wouldn't have had that early support from like cool people, you know.
I agree. It all comes back to that, having support from the underground, really.
Yeah.
I look at Fish.
Yeah.
None of Fish's records did that big commercially straight from the get go, if you know what I mean. Like,
no.
They all came from every DJ playing it.
Yeah, losing it was big, because literally at the time, before it became what it is now, like, it was a really hot record that everyone wanted to play. Yeah. And like, there was fucking drum and bass DJs playing that record.
Exactly.
Like,
special. Mental.
Yeah.
I also want to go back to this Splice thing, because you're the only artist that I've like really kind of paid attention to that's like gone in on this Splice sample creating, and like, it's been branded very well to you. Like, I write music for people sometimes, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I just downloaded the new Noisy pack," if you know what I mean, or whatever. And I'm like,
"Yeah, it's
a really interesting." I've been asked to do it, and I've always said no, because I just didn't ever think it just wasn't something that interested me. However, I really respect and really like what you've done. And I just kind of want to get your thoughts on it all.
So I'd say I'm definitely more of a producer than a DJ.
Yeah.
Like, when it comes down to it, I'm way more comfortable in the studio. I suppose I don't know what prompted it. I think I used, they gave me like, a login for Splice, and I was like, to use, and I was like, oh yeah, this is cool. But it was really, there wasn't much like house stuff on there. It was very like hip hop and pop based. And then I had my own collection of sounds that I was using for all my like club stuff, and they asked to do it. And I was still quite early in my career, so I was like, yeah, fuck it, let's do it.
Yeah.
And, I always kept it really drum heavy rather than melodic.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think people are going to use drums. Like, people steal drums, kick drums from the beginning of records, or hi-hats from the mixing. And like, you just do. Like, let's be honest. So, like, drums you can't get too particular about. So I just thought, as long as it's like super drum heavy, not really giving away, like, it's not like I could be replaced.
Yeah.
But it turned into a thing. Like, I didn't really know. I just thought I'd do it and it would just be cool. But it really did, like, a lot of people ended up using them and downloading it. And I hear it all the time. And people are always like, oh, does it not annoy you? But I'm like, why would it? It's great. So that's what it's there for. It's there to be used. And
well, it's also that's what people are paying for, right? It's like,
yeah, exactly.
If you want,
everyone wins from it.
Yeah, if you want good quality, there's a sample pack that I use a ride from nearly in every record, and it's like,
yeah,
I'm just like, yeah, that ride's fucking great, so I'm gonna use it. Like, I don't care if it's from another artist or if it's from somebody else. It's fucking good.
No,
it's like,
I mean, that's the thing. I used to, when I first had a Pro Tools and like a PC back in the day, like they used to do sample CDs with like samples on, and like I used to just use all that shit. So it's very different. No. It's just like, but yeah, like I want to do another one, but it takes a lot of time, and I just, you know, the time it takes to do it, I could write another record, or two records, you know,
or five.
Or five. I mean, it took a month to do each one, I think.
How much, what do you have to, what's the, like, the parameters of having to submit? Like, what are they?
Well, they changed every time I did one. But essentially, like, there's a certain amount of samples you have to have. It has to cross, like, different, it can't all, you can just do, like, a kick drum, 500 kick drums. Yeah. It has to be, like, all this stuff. You do have to have melodic in it as well. It can't just be drums. They have their rules. But yeah, I didn't realize it was going to be a thing that people would use. And like the most I get messages from the most random people. There's this guy who produced Lady Gaga. He's a blood pop. I can't remember who it was.
Let me find
out. He was working on like a Lady Gaga song. Yeah. And he was like, oh, will you use your splice pack? I was like, what the fuck?
That's annoying though, isn't it? Because it's like,
yeah, I know.
Because that's the one time you'd actually make some fucking money out of all of this.
I know. But then again, it's like, yeah, okay, they're using a fucking, you know, hi-hat or a kick drum. It's like, I'm not going to get paid for that.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, you're not going to get publishing for a kick drum.
I don't know though. Like, I recently wrote a record for somebody. Red One? Yeah. Was it Red One?
Oh, it could have been Red One. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I can't remember. It was years. It was like when I first, it was the volume one.
Yeah, Red One.
And it was, yeah.
No, I recently wrote a record with somebody and pretty much all my drums are on it. And I was like, no, I want writing on that because it's a club record.
Yeah.
And yes, I didn't write the melody, but if you take all the drums out, and I wrote the bass line as well, but if you take all the drums out, like, you don't have the record. So
yeah, I think, okay, yeah, that's I think that's different.
Yeah, it's different. It's for like using a sample,
you have like a signature drum sound.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, but I do think we need to like talk about that in the industry, about drums being part of writing. I think it's a huge part of it.
I mean, fucking hell, if you listen to like where some of this minimal, like more the more underground tech house has gone with like the more minimal stuff, that is just drums.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no fucking music in it whatsoever.
You were missing the Kylie Minogue example.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's just something I personally don't get too precious about with the splice stuff. It's like,
without me getting too in-depth, how do you earn money from it?
So you pay a subscription to Splice.
Yeah.
So it's like Spotify. It's like Spotify. And then depending on how many downloads you get a percentage of
that download.
Of the overall pot.
Yeah.
So you can make good money. I mean, I know people that make a fucking good living from just doing Splice.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's all they do.
Yeah, yeah. I know the Tool Room ones make a fuck ton of money.
Tool Room. I mean, the Tool Room packs are amazing.
Yeah.
I did a... I think that was the other thing, because I used the Tool Room pack on Baby Baby, this other song I did years ago. And, that was like... And then I was like, fuck, it's pretty cool that, you know, you can do this.
Yeah.
I think, and it was the Tool Room stuff that inspired me to do it.
Yeah.
Their stuff's really good.
Yeah, their stuff's good, and it's, they've created a business from... I don't know. I've not spoke to Mark about it, but
yeah,
like they've created a really solid business out of it, from what I can imagine.
Yeah, I from what I've learned from Splice and seeing how much more they've done and how well they do, I reckon they do all right.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I reckon
definitely,
they're fine.
Definitely, man. Mate, we've just done an hour and a half, pretty much. We should probably wrap it up. But thank you so much for coming on. Yeah. How can people follow you? How can people get involved with Noizu? How can people send you records to sign to Techni, et cetera, et cetera?
If you want to send records to Techni, we use TrackStack, which if you just go on the Instagram or Twitter, it will be there in the bio. Techni Records. And my Instagram is just Noizu Sound. And yeah.
Sick.
That's it.
Thanks for coming on, mate. I will see
thanks,
you
mate.
Very
I appreciate
soon,
that.
I'm sure. Big love. Keep safe. See you soon.
Cheers, bro.
And that is a wrap. Big love to Noizu for coming on. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe. Please share. Please give us a review. And don't forget, if you want to get involved in the community, hit the link in the description. Big love. Till next time.
What if you could have a career where the opportunities are as vast as our nation, where it's not about mission statements, but a shared mission? At U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we go beyond to protect more than borders. From ship to shore, air to ground, cities to local communities, CBP agents and officers are keeping people safe. Join U.S. Customs and Border Protection and go beyond for something far greater than yourself. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.